This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.
Hello, everyone. How are we all doing? Come on in. Sit on down. Let's have a bit of a talk, a bit of a live Q&A. As I'm waiting for people to roll in, I'll explain for the people who are not live listening to this that, this was originally going to be a new episode of the Truther Therapy Sessions tonight, which I normally do every Sunday. However, I did have a guest lined up for this, which is Mark Steves from My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. But unfortunately, due to unforeseen circumstances, something came up and Mark was not able to join me. So instead of making a new episode of the Truther Therapy Sessions, I decided, why don't I just do a live Q&A instead? Something, a bit of fun, a bit of interaction with the audience. And just to see how you guys are doing and what's been on your mind. And if there's anything you want me to discuss or get into, because, you know, I cast a wide net on this channel. I discuss many subjects and topics. And you know, I have been pondering the millennial kingdom and whether or not it has come and gone and what that would mean for us. And if anyone wants to talk about that today, then I think that could be a fun little topic for us. What angle or what part of this particular topic would you guys like me to discuss more? Is there a particular part of this you would like me to theorize about or speculate on, or maybe there's a part of it I've not quite considered? Now, of course, I, like most other Christians, have already considered all of the theories that go against this idea. You know, I have gone through the motions through my own theological journey, you know, and I've also understood the idea that tribulation is unfolding and we are not in the post-millennial kingdom. And for a long time, I was also in that camp, also looking for the signs of revelations to unfold, you know, so I've been there. So it's not useful for you to then send me messages telling me why I'm wrong about the post-millennial thing and why we still need to see all these signs happening before Jesus returns. Because this is the thing, we're trying to get past that right now and consider in all seriousness the concept that maybe that has come and gone. And, you know, I've postulated that many of these signs you're waiting for would have already happened and become buried in history if it was true, you know. So I know this is relatively wild speculation, but there is precedence to consider this angle, okay? So I am, for thought experiment purposes, and not as an authority, but as somebody who's just thinking about the situation, I am thinking about the situation, okay? And I am considering all logical reasonings and outcomes that could make sense of this if it is true, and also to make sense of the lengths that must have been pursued to hide it, you know, because this would have been no easy task to hide the existence of Jesus Christ ruling for 1,000 years on earth, you know. And a lot of things I hear people talking about is, well, it's not an earthly kingdom that you should be looking for. Jesus rules from heaven. have heard the argument so that we are currently in the thousand-year reign of Christ. Then I've also heard the argument that one day is 1,000 years to the Lord, so we are in the millennial reign indefinitely, permanently, you know, for an extremely long time, and it's not relevant to us as well. But still, we need to make sense of these buildings everywhere that do not add up to the capabilities of the peoples we're told who built them. I mean, the complexity of some of these structures baffles the mind. It's mind-boggling, okay? And it's hard to believe that people with, you know, horse and carriages and rope pulleys and perhaps some metallurgy behind them to create some kind of things to pull rocks could create such things in such short amount of time as they claim they were built, and even tear them down in such a short time afterwards. If you look at some of the historical photos of some of the buildings that are now gone, which were built and then within 20 years destroyed. This also doesn't make any sense when you look at these buildings, because they are beautiful and they are intense and would have been extremely labor intensive, you know, if possible, if it was even possible for them to do it with their tools and their capabilities. So these things do have to be understood and answered at the end of the day. And one common thing I'm always hearing all the time is, oh, those buildings were from before the flood during the time of Noah. And, you know, I thought I was stretching time a little bit to try and fit this in, you know, with the extra 1,000 years added, or perhaps 1,000 years ignored and called something else like the Dark Ages rather than what it truly was, which is an age of truth and light ruled by the Son of God, you know. But to believe that these structures survived that long, so that, you know, we're talking about the flood of Noah, what, 4,000 to 5,000 years ago? These buildings were around before the flood of Noah? I mean, that is an outrageous theory. And I feel like that is their way to stretch as much as they can to explain away the possibility that the millennial kingdom has already happened. Because it always follows with, oh, those buildings must have been built by evil pagans during the time of Noah, and what, Jesus is still about to return, we're still in tribulation, you know. And it's kind of like, oh, have you just thought about what you said there? These buildings are 4,000 years old. I don't think so, because we can actually go and look at these buildings today that still exist, and they have decayed, you know. They're not permanent structures that can last for such a large amount of time. I mean, maybe structures like the pyramids, for example, and these far more clearly ancient megalithic structures with stones so huge it baffles the mind to consider how any human was capable of moving these such a long time ago under any circumstance, with such a bizarre stonework design, like they're melted into each other with razor-thin gaps between the stones, almost non-existent gaps, you know. The accuracy involved and the work involved to build these far ancient, enormous megalithic structures. Yes, I can believe they were probably built a long time ago before the flood of Noah, because they look like they've been through a flood. They are destroyed, they are battered, they are weathered. The pyramids are just crumbling, but they still stand today, but they are a mess. So anything that was before the flood would look equally as battered as these buildings. Like I said, anything, you know, these Tartarian buildings, as we call them, or the millennial reign buildings, they should look equally as battered as the pyramids, should they not? You know, as all the megalithic structures on the earth, they should look equally as decrepit and weathered, you know, but they don't. A lot of these old world buildings, for lack of a better phrase, still look pretty pristine. They look in pretty good shape, you know, like they were built a long time ago, yes, but not that long ago. You know, not quite that long ago. And the masonry is very good. Very, very intricate and well put together. And, you know, sturdy, yes. So they have lasted a long time. But they look old. They do look like they've had some weathering to them, yes. You know, and they've gone through time. But they don't look as old and weathered as the really, really, really ancient structures that were likely before the flood. You know, in fact, the worst things these buildings appear to have gone through is they have sunk a little bit, maybe a couple of meters. And this is where the mud flood idea comes into it. There's plenty of evidence to show that these particular buildings that have this particular stamp on them, this strange mark of design and structure and intricacy, appear to be either a few feet to a few meters slightly under the ground, you know, as though liquefaction of the ground made them just sink, or a flood of mud somehow buried them a little bit, but nothing like a full, like a full flood that would have decimated everything and ripped the bricks away, and just the torrents, the force. Imagine if the earth was encased in water, okay, you know, like the biblical flood would have been. Could you imagine the forces and the pressures under that water, and the torrents and the streams, the jet streams that would have formed, that would have been pulling buildings and just churning them apart like a blender, you know what I mean? The super forces that would have just torn apart simple buildings and skyscrapers and things like that, you know? And that doesn't seem to have happened. But what they do seem to have gone through is some kind of bizarre, slight minor inconvenience of being buried a little bit. Which again is strange, because you don't build these type of buildings slightly underground. Like these windows that are partially underground, you know, that peak up to the horizon, you know, to the walking level, to the street below. It's kind of like, why would you build like that? Why would you lay your foundations like that in such a way? And these aren't necessarily like basement rooms that we're talking about. These are levels to the building that just happen to be slightly underground. And then there's a basement below them, you know what I mean? So it's bizarre. It's just so bizarre. And these evidences all around us that our history is a lie. Something happened that we're not being told, or has been covered up in some way. And there has been this timeline created, this chronology, we'll call it, which we have just taken for granted as the truth, which was formed by perhaps less than reputable characters, you know. And we have to question, like, I think it was a Calvinist, actually. People say it was a Jesuit who came up with our timeline that we follow today. It's kind of the main timeline that's been universally agreed upon by historians, they say. I think it was a Calvinist, not a Jesuit, who came up with it when I looked.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more, and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell. Fast. To our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Into it. I don't know his name offhand right now, but I will have to get it up. But there's something suspicious about it. Why this chronology in particular, you know? And there have been attempts at making new chronologies. You know, Antoloy Fomenko is a good example of this, you know, who has basically said, you know, a lot of these characters throughout history appear to be the same, though they're equated to being within different locations on Earth and different time periods, but they essentially did the same things, just geographically different, according to the way they were described. And it's implying they're talking about the same character, but what we've done with our chronology is turned them into two separate people throughout history and made up and tried to form a coherent narrative around that misinterpretation. Do you get what I mean? And we've just gone with what we best understand. And, you know, sure, we have archaeological evidence to say that there were time periods with certain people that existed at some point. But, you know, carbon dating techniques, dendrochronology, I think it's called, where you look at the rings on trees and things like this. At best, they're highly questionable, you know, and when you look into the tree situation as well, that just makes things even more weird. It really does, because there aren't that many old trees on Earth. Now, there are trees, yes, that you can find that maybe are 1,000 years old, 2,000 years old. Some claim to be 5,000 to 6,000 years old. But when you get to that level and you look at these trees that are supposedly that old, they are practically dead. There's no leaves growing on them anymore. They are weathered, decayed, decrepit. They look like they've been battered, perhaps by a flood of some kind. You know, they are a husk of their former selves. And I've even seen examples of straight-up tree stumps that have been cut down and destroyed and have turned to rubble already being used as examples of really old trees. It's like, that's not a tree that's living. You can't claim that's a real... You can't use that as an example. It's cheating. Where are the really old, great, huge, enormous trees that have lived and continued on? You know, where are they? And there aren't that many. Relatively speaking, the norm is that most of the Earth's forestry, is quite young. So that has to be taken into account too. That's bizarre. That's strange. Okay, and this is what I'm saying. Sure, you can make the arguments that, well, you know, we should have seen this happen, we should have seen that happen, we haven't seen these prophecies being fulfilled yet. It would have been obvious if Armageddon had happened, all this type of stuff. And because we haven't seen any of this yet, and because Israel has been made into a state which was prophesied to happen, then we must be in this specific point in tribulations, and Christ is just about to return. And it's kind of like, okay, sure, so you have your precedence for that train of thought, which is, okay, so Israel has been created in the 40s, so that means, you know, we must be at this point right now. Fair enough, but then how do you explain all these strange anomalies with everything else I've just described? Where does that fit into it? You know, could it be possible that this Israel you talk about that's been created as a nation today in the specific geographical location is smoke and mirrors, and it's not really the one discussed in Revelations? They're just trying to make it look like that. Could the answer be that simple? And the aim is to make you continuously believe Jesus is about to return. This is conspiratorial speculation here. I'm spitballing a narrative to try and justify this concept or how it would work here. So they're spinning a narrative to make it seem like Revelations is coming to pass. So when that thing does turn up, which will call itself Jesus, people will be expecting it and will have followed the signs perfectly by the script. So they are certain they are correct that this truly is the Messiah come back to rule on earth, and we now get to reign with him for 1,000 years, okay? So they can make it look like that's happening, let's say. If you control enough resources, have enough wealth, control the media, control the direction of people's attentions, and you have infinite resources at your disposal, then you could probably make it look like a convincing Revelations, tribulation, end time event is happening. You probably could make it look like that, couldn't you? So, what does turn up if it's not Jesus? It's probably a deceiver of some kind, isn't it? It's probably going to be something posing to be like Christ. And as I was just discussing with my recent guests about the history of Gnosticism and how all-pervasive and parasitic it truly is, and how it does seem to be, from my own research, this is the New Age religion for the New World Order, and it's Christian-ish. You understand? And I believe this world teacher, as Helena Blavatsky would have described it, after the process of the externalization of the hierarchy, where everyone is prepared for the world savior to arrive, and it's been prepped with the Gnostic worldview of Christ consciousness expansion and the rest, you know, and you know, it's all about doing the inner work rather than understanding doctrine for what it is and understanding that we need a savior, a personal savior outside of ourselves. If people are prepped for that, then when this world teacher does turn up, it could sound Christian enough to convince enough people that it is Christ come to return to rule for 1,000 years. But really, it's this pernicious twist using Christian symbols and words to promote the New World Order agenda and the New World religion, the one world religion that will bring all religions together. They were all just talking about humanity doing the inner work to become Christs themselves. And this Jesus, so-called, will say, my true message was to make you all become just like me. And I'm here now to teach that message once more and help you all ascend to be gods. You know? And that sounds millennial reign-ish, but it's not. It's a twist that appeals to the pride within us, you know, and it's a Gnostic, parasitic lie. So again, running with this thought experiment, you know, narrative I'm spinning here, just for Just to hash it out, you know? Could that being then convince everybody to join forces as one and become of one mind, of one culture, of one language, of one currency, of one religion, of one thought, maybe even through transhumanist means? Maybe that's the technology they use to promise you can reach Christ consciousness, you know, merge with AI and technology and computers and become like us, you know, that type of thing. Could they spin it that way and work it that way? Who knows? I'm just, again, just spitballing, trying to add everything that we see around us in modern society into this narrative. And then could he convince then, if there's suddenly an attack on Earth from bad people, and could they say, that's Satan. Satan's come to attack us all. He's come to, it's his final stand. He's been released, you know, and this is it. This is it. He's gathered an army to attack us. And the camp of saints is the earth. It's all of us together in our new one world togetherness, you know, after you know, maybe a couple of 100 years of peace and rulership with his false leader. He'll say, Satan's just been released for his little season and he wants to make war with us. Let's all come together and attack him and take him down first. You know, it could spin something like that. So it sounds Christianish. That sounds revelation-y, doesn't it? That's what was said in the thing. But what if it's all just a lie and an inversion? What if Jesus already ruled for 1,000 years a long time ago, and this false savior who's turned up after a false tribulation event was orchestrated by this false leader who turned up? What if he's convinced his new army to go and circle the camp of saints, as truly predicted in Revelations, and he convinces the whole earth to go to war with the saints and Jesus? What if it's a double blind? What if this is what's really going on? What if that is the conspiracy? You know, people like to speculate, like to speculate in the conspiracy world about big ideas and the consequences of believing those big ideas. Flat Earth was a huge thing. You know, okay, so if the Earth flat, what does this mean? You know, if that is so, then A, B, and C. And the thought experiment of the flat Earth or enclosed Earth system came out with, well, that would mean there was a God, there was a creator. We are bigger than we think we are. And the deceptions used against us are enormous. You know, so I'm doing the same thing with this. Okay, so if millennial kingdom has come and gone, then what? So if the millennial reign has come and gone, then A, B, and C. And these are the ABCs I'm trying to tell you right now. This is what is probably going on if that's the true narrative. Now, I'm not telling you to believe me and to say, okay, yeah, so Paul definitely believes that the millennial reign has come and gone, therefore I'm going to follow his word. I'm not a te I'm not a I'm not, this isn't church. I'm not an authority on anything. I'm a guy who has thoughts who is speaking them out loud. And you know, as a man of faith, I believe I need to speculate about all possible possibilities and their inevitable outcomes, so I'm not deceived when whatever happens, happens. Okay. I mean, a lot of people like to think, and maybe I'm a flat earther as well, because I use similar language. The truth is, I'm not. I would not identify with the flat earth movement. I identify with it's not what they told us movement. Okay. I believe actually the nature of our creation and our reality and the earth that we inhabit is far more beyond our comprehension than we would like to understand. I don't think we have the capacity to truly understand what it is that we inhabit. I think all things will be revealed in the end, and that's just fine by me. But I wouldn't identify with the movement that's known as Flat Earth, though I do know everything about it. You know, I went through the, I've studied it hard since it's.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more, and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell. Fast. To our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sail for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Inception into the culture. You know, it's been there since the beginning when I started in 2012. And I understand it, okay? I understand all the arguments. I know this is a touchy subject for a lot of people in the truth and movement. But where I stand is that I've taken it on board as a possibility. But I don't know what it actually is. All I know is it's not what they have told us. It's not what the institutions around us who have established themselves to uphold the lie have told us. That's where I stand on that. Because again, I tackle all of this from the perspective of all possibilities must be considered. So when things do go down, I'm not shocked or surprised. My heart will not fail me for fear. And also my faith can remain strong. And I think the issue with the truth movement is that it does cause a lot of fear and panic through wild speculation and lack of preparation due to latching onto specific ideas without considering alternative views. Okay, dogma takes over, the conspiratorial dogma. I myself am willing to talk to people of all beliefs, of all doctrines, of all theologies to get to the bottom of this, because we all have a piece of the puzzle to share. We all have our own perspectives and our own views on what's going on here. So yeah, there's a bit of a few thoughts I've had about the millennial kingdom and a few things I've tried to imagine about what's going on there. Another thing that might be worth mentioning that I've heard quite a lot recently, well, I've heard someone mention recently, which was clever. You know, I'm always talking about, so if this is a little season and Satan's gathering his armies, then he's going to get everyone to go really far north to the broad plains and, you know, northern Siberia, northern Russia, northern Canada, and surround that camp of saints in the center of the earth, which would be the Rupus Negra, the Black Rock of the North Pole, or not necessarily geographical North Pole, but magnetic North Pole, the one that's moving, the one that perhaps is a floating city, maybe, where the Camp of Saints perhaps could be. This is all theory and speculation, of course. You know, I don't know specifically because I've not been there. But I always say, oh, so he's going to get this army, he's going to get us all to march north to encircle the Camp of Saints. But then I realized, if this is a spiritual battle, no one would have to march anywhere. Because if he is in the North Pole, he's already encircled by all of humanity who's against him. No one would have to move. Because if the whole Earth gets deceived and is aligned with this one world doctrine of the New World Order run by the false Messiah, then already everyone surrounding the Camp of Saints is his enemy. And then maybe he wouldn't make war with the Camp of Saints isn't a physical war. You know, maybe making war with the Camp of Saints is just simply being against Jesus Christ, the true Jesus, but instead aligning yourself with this false Messiah that came and claimed to be Jesus. If you've done that, then spiritually speaking, you've chosen the wrong side, you know, and you are now an enemy of God and Christ, and you've made yourself an enemy of God and Christ, giving way to itching ears and doctrines that make you feel good rather than the truth, you know. And maybe that's how the fire coming down from heaven thing at the very, very, very end happens, and how people will not see it coming. Because think about this, if it says in Revelations, you know, Satan gathers an army and makes them encircle the Camp of Saints to make war with them, and then fire comes down and destroys them all, how is he going to convince everybody to go to this place when it clearly says in the book, fire is going to rain down from heaven when you do that and you're all going to die? Like, it'd be hard pressed to convince people to do that, because then people will go, hang on, didn't it say Satan would make us all gather around something circular and make us fight and then we all die? Wait a minute, is this leader not really Jesus? People would ask questions pretty quickly. But what if nobody saw it coming because nobody had to actually march on anything? Once the whole world is deceived and the whole world is under the system created by this false Jesus, then fire would probably come down from heaven because the entire Camp of Saints is then fully encircled by his enemies. Because everybody in that time, during the short season, picked the wrong side, you know. Who knows? Maybe there'll be people during that season who have to live through it knowing it's Satan's season and do not give up their faith and endure till the end. There'll always be those people, I'm sure. It'd be hard-pressed to convince the entire population of the Earth. It would be extremely hard-pressed. Unless there was a huge depopulation event which wiped out 8.5 billion people and left it under about 500 million perpetually. And then maybe that's not many people to deceive. Maybe that will be easier. You know, we know there's agendas for depopulation around. We know they've written about it in their books, you know, and they even put it in stone for a short while in Georgia, didn't they? So who knows? Who knows? There's many agendas at play here. Perhaps many factions who are trying to do it their way. I don't know, but there's something spiritual behind all of this. Definitely, there's So this is what I'm saying. I'm not saying all these things because I want to shake people's theology or faith necessarily. I'm speculating on these ideas because I don't want people to be surprised when things start to happen. You know, because things maybe are about to happen. And you might see on the screen right here, for example, you know, these are from like the 20s, the 1920s, the 1940s, perhaps, when these photos were taken. And you see men walking around with the end is nigh signs. And it's like, you think about that concept. It's like, what does that actually mean? The end is nigh? I mean, if these people are Christians, surely they should have signs saying things like, the beginning is nigh. Jesus is about to return. Don't worry, guys. You know, because when Jesus returns, that's not the end. That's not what the book says. Really, it's the beginning of his reign. It's a good thing. You know, only Jesus' enemies would worry about the end being nigh, wouldn't they? Would worry so much about Jesus returning that they would consider it an apocalyptic event. So another realm of speculation, what if these people who had these signs were probably people who have this type of belief I'm talking about here? What if they genuinely believe, the literal end is about to happen and a new heaven and earth is about to be created. Final great white throne judgment is about to happen. You know, the literal end is nigh. The end, not Jesus coming in 1,000 years and then the end. You know, he means, we're at the end of all that. The end is nigh. What if that's what they were actually trying to get at? And just that got lost in history, that idea, that concept, that translation of what they were actually trying to say. What if that was the case? If someone has any insight into what these people were about or what type of movement they were a part of more than I know, let me know. I've not looked into it yet specifically to check what the historical record says about people who wore these type of signs. But just food for thought. Anyway, guys, I'm going to come to the chat now. I'm going to see what you were all saying. Now, let me just get to the top here. Electric Blue Bee, thanks for being here. Tristan, thanks for being here. Mean Green Meme Machine, I like that. Thanks for being here, I appreciate it. Alan, good to see you. Thoughts on the Miami Alien? I have made a video about that already. But to summarize it very quickly, I think it was either A, the testing of holographic technology like Blue Beam to see how much they could convince the public that aliens exist. That's A, possibility. For B, it was like they all just made up in a psyop, orchestrated to spread into the consciousness the concept of aliens returning or the Nephilim returning to prep people for that concept. Or it could simply have been a normal looting event. And because they were worried about the particular demographic that may have been involved, they came up with a couple of stories such as aliens in order to make people not really discuss it. It could also be a huge distraction to detract away from that particular list that was just released. You know, to be honest, I don't know. It's a little bit far away from home for me to have much to say about that. But it was interesting. It was certainly interesting that the end result was that the words Nephilim, UFOs, and what else was it? Aliens became the top trending on Twitter after that event. You know, when the word Nephilim becomes mainstream, you know something weird's happening, okay? So that's probably all I have to say about that. What would living be like in the Millennial Kingdom, says Christian Soldier? Well, from what I understand, there'll be those who were martyred for Jesus' sake will be resurrected into glorious, very, very, maybe perhaps immortal bodies, which were far more advanced than ours, probably in thought capability as well, highly connected to spiritual realms and concepts too. Almost like gods among men is what the first resurrected would become. And there was likely survivors of Armageddon or tribulation that would have made it into the Millennial Kingdom who also would have extended life, but they would still be mortal and die and have children and have to continue normally. But I think they would have had an extended lifespan. I imagine there still would have been enemies of Christ around during that time, and there would have been probably wars initially. And I don't think everything would have been hunky-dory and perfect immediately. I think Unexpected Cosmology has some amazing work on that, talking about the European wars that happened supposedly, in the establishing of Britain. And it's talking about Merlin, the myths of the Knights of the Round Table, talking about the white dragons and the red dragons. And he's saying this was all allegory to describe the war of Jesus coming from heaven against the established leadership of the time, the pagan leadership of the time as well. And that was fascinating. And I think he believes, and I don't know the validity of this yet. I want to get him on to talk about it because it sounds so interesting. But I think
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
He believes that the Saxons, which were told were in history a Germanic tribe, a northern Germanic land tribe of going through Germany to Belgium up to the Dutch provinces, all that kind of region. This tribe known as the Saxons. You look into it and it says the Saxons had no written language, or much advancement in terms of civilization. That's all you really hear about them. And it's like, what kind of culture existed during that time that didn't have a language of written down of some? Everybody had a language of some kind. But what he's postulating is no, the Saxons were the armies of Christ who came and took over England, but then obviously there are questions about all of that. It says, well, who were the Vikings then who made a war with them not long afterwards and all this type of thing, like 400 years later. And there's a lot of history that does need sense making, but then I think you have to consider the chronology of things. They have been messed up and the timings of all these things. You're told first Saxons and then a few hundred years later Vikings, but what if it was first Saxons, then 1,000 year later Vikings, and that time period was actually a lot longer than we think? This is what I'm saying, like, what if it really is because of the many timelines that exist and the poor dating of things. It is, you could speculate more than actually know the truth about particular timing. So, I've heard that before. So maybe it wasn't all peace immediately, but once it was established, I think it came to the point, where it would have been a pretty nice time to be alive, certainly. A lot more knowledge, things would have been known that were previously unknown, because you could literally go to Jesus himself and ask him, for the information and the truth on matters. The truth would have been well established. Satan would have been bound, so there would have been no adversary out there stirring the pot and causing rebellion and division. It would have been quite a prosperous time for all of humanity. And in that time, where you've got the time, 1,000 years is quite a while, where you have these abilities and these perfect bodies that live for a lot longer. Sickness is gone, and your virility is through the roof, and your abilities are just tenfold, and your ability to learn is longer because you have longer to learn things. Then it would have been a you probably would have put that time, because you didn't have to work really for money anymore, in the sense where, people probably weren't starving or homeless. I assume there was many mansions in this time, but I imagine people would have put their time into pursuing the creative arts to venerate the beauty of God's creation and the gift bestowed upon them to live during a time of peace, you know. And would you build beautiful buildings during that time, which would have taken a long time to get all the details right, all the flourishes and the intricacies and then the patterns into the stonemasonry and the work to master the crafts behind all of that? And, you know, I'm not talking about Freemasonry here, the false builders who so-called claim ownership of such things under this paradigm and this kind of concept, but not the parasitic secret society Masons, but people who just worked with stone because they had time to learn that kind of thing during the millennial reign, those type of Masons, you know, real stone Masons, not mystery school religion Masons who exist today, you know. I imagine they would build beautiful buildings and make beautiful artwork and sing beautiful songs. You know, what else would you, you know, build beautiful lives? I imagine that's the type of world it would be if it was a physical kingdom on the earth ruled by God himself. And again, this is the argument. Do we see remnants of this? And people argue as well, you know, well, a lot of these buildings have seemed to have pagan iconography all over them, goddess worship, and the veneration of pagan deities and demons are on outside, things like gargoyles as well. And I just can't believe Jesus would allow such things to be on his temples. And it's kind of like, well, humans like to document things and create immortalized statues to remember things, including the bad stuff. And it's possible this artwork we see on buildings is trying to tell a story. Sure, it might be pagan in iconography, but is that not our history? It's where we came from, not where they were during that time. And would they not create the story of human history and the false gods into artwork so they could look at it and always remember the past and say, we used to follow those false idols, but now we know the truth? Could it be possible that's what happened? Could it also be possible that what people call goddess idols and worship things on top of these, the churches, you know, and all over the place, oh, well, that's clearly a representation of Tammuz or Isis or something. It's goddess worship. It's wrong. It's evil. Jesus wouldn't allow that. All these statues of women everywhere, you know, and these, it's clearly goddesses. That's clearly Athena or something like that. It says, well, what if it isn't? What if they are literally just self-portraits of the perfected humans who lived during the millennial reign? What if it was them? What if you're looking at these perfected humans who just had the time and the skills and the intense ability to create such things just to represent themselves? And today, from our perspective, we call them goddesses or statues of gods and goddesses in some way. I don't know, you know. Another explanation would be, well, once Satan's kingdom takes over, once he's released for his little season, you know, and Jesus goes with the saints to the camp of saints and takes a back foot and allows Satan to take over and have his season as it's written to be. Would Satan not perhaps create things to pervert what was there and left behind by the kingdom by putting demons all over stuff? And, you know, who knows? But also, you have to understand symbolically, gargoyles and demons on the outside of cathedrals is supposed to be symbolic of the outside world is full of evil and darkness and treachery and terrors, but inside the cathedral it's beautiful, it's peaceful, it's glorious, and it glorifies the kingdom of God, you know. And that was kind of the point. It's kind of like come out of the darkness into the light type of stuff, you know. I'm not trying to sound like a Gnostic like that. I'm just talking about it more in a biblical sense of, you know, yeah, the worldly stuff is evil. Yes, the world out there has demons influencing things and false gods and idols. Come out of the world and come to Christ, you know, and symbolically you can do that through the architecture. The outside world, the outside facade of the architecture is full of evil iconography, but come inside and it's a glorification of God, you know. It's so you could argue that as well, but I think all those arguments are valid to justify that common question I get. Why all the evil pagan iconography? Well, A, people could have just been simply documenting history, not venerating idols, but remembering the past so they can know where they are and where they came from by putting it in stone. B, they may actually just been self-portraits of godly people who lived during that time who were in perfected bodies that from our perspective now look like gods and goddesses. Or C, They are gods and goddesses of a pagan type and demonic, and they were put there by Satan at the beginning of his little season to pervert the past. So there are explanations and answers for these questions. It just takes a little bit of speculation. Because, again, this is highly speculative. But it can't be discounted. I cannot just discount it and chuck it to one side. You know, I really can't. We have to work it through. We really do. And at the same time, you know, I like history. You know, I've talked about history plenty of times on my channel, and I'm talking about it in a way that does go against the Millennial Kingdom theory, because I'm not 100% invested that the Millennial Kingdom thing is 100% true. We can't possibly be, you know, and I'm not willing to discount documented history that we do have that, you know, if we follow it correctly backwards, then that means all this stuff would have happened during the Millennial Kingdom, if we want to go with the Millennial Kingdom stuff, you know. So something has to be wrong if you want to believe the Millennial Kingdom. But maybe it is all accurate. Maybe my history is accurate, and maybe the Millennial Kingdom hasn't happened yet as well. I am open to that, you know. And it's clearly stuff did happen in the past, which was documented and we have the archaeological evidence for. And we are told it happened in, like, 900 AD, or, you know, 125 AD or something. You know, during these times where we're told, the, you know, from this theory's perspective, the Millennial Kingdom should have been happening. But what if we've just been lied about the dates of these events? So, it's kind of like, it says the rest of the dead are resurrected after the millennial reign. And the arguments are, well, is that an immediate resurrection, or is that right at the end? You know, then we have to answer that question. So who are we then, if this is a little season? Are we the resurrected, or the rest of the dead that didn't know Christ prior, resurrected to live during little season? Or are we the descendants of the people who lived through the little season, who didn't have perfected bodies, but maybe had longevity, you know? Are we those, or are we them, or is it a bit of both? You know, and what if it literally is? People were living a certain way, a certain life, a certain history with events happening. Then as soon as the Millennial Kingdom came, all that stopped. And then as soon as the Millennial Kingdom left, they picked up exactly where they left off. And what if it's not that the Dark Ages, as we call them, the medieval period, was actually the Millennial Reign of Christ? What if the Millennial Reign of Christ 1,000 years has simply just been removed? And they've just continued on as though it never.
Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.
Happened, and just don't include those 1,000 years in our history. So the 2,024 years of history we have documented is accurate, but really it was 3,024 years of history, and they've just removed that 1,000 years completely. You know, and the people who were resurrected just continued the old civilization that they came from, as though the Millennial Kingdom just never happened. They were none the wiser. They were born during a time where Satan ruled once more, and it was just as it was before Jesus came. You know, this is what I'm saying. Like, we have to try and explain that somehow. There's documented history. We know, we supposedly know what happened during the medieval period. We've got it documented. We call it a Dark Ages, where nothing much happened, they say, but stuff did happen, and we have the documents to say things happened. You know, we've got stuff documented down for that time period, you know, and books from people. You know, and the development of the church, even, you know, and all sorts of things are documented quite clearly. You know? And we can't just throw that all out as just made up. So something, stuff did happen clearly, you know, and it's, I'm not going to readily just destroy and get rid of all of history, but, you know, to speculate on this particular theory, we have to square it somehow. We've got to figure it out, you know. So I'm positing ideas here. These are just ideas. Do not take what I say as, like, final word or authority on anything. Please don't do that, you know. Anyway, guys, sorry, I'm going to go back to the chat now and let's see what's been going on. I've been talking for 45 minutes already. I really shouldn't go much longer than an hour today. It is quite late for me. So I'm gonna have a look. If anyone has any questions, please try to tag my name in it or leave a super chat or something so I see it if you really want it answered. Just let me know. So let me just go back. Drunk Wedding Photographer, thanks for being here. Sorry, guys. I'm trying to see if any questions were asked of people. So Chaos Elite 33 says he can't get behind the millennial theory, but he likes the clown stuff. Well, fair enough. You know, each to their own. Like I said, this is one of those things you've just got to take with a pinch of salt. Everything seasoned with salt on this type of topic, you know. I'm glad you like the clown stuff as well. But even with that, you know, it's a theory. It's a working theory. I think there's a lot of evidence to back up what I'm saying, though. Wendy, thanks for being here. Don't worry about being late. That's fine. There was a sudden dip in viewers then. 20 people just randomly logged off at once from the looks of it. That's weird. What else is going on in the chat, guys? What else have we got? Do you agree with the mud flood theory, says the Nut House? Agree with the mud flood theory? I mean, they're trying to say some kind of cataclysm happened, which reset everything, aren't they? But they're not really sure why. I've heard speculation that it was a pole reversal of some kind. J Dreamer Z talks about that concept, doesn't he? That there's always this flip every so often that fully resets the Earth, where phantasoids come down from the etherical dome that disappears during that time period before it reappears again once the poles align. You know, and it brings with it monsters and chaos and all sorts of things, and people become zombies and resurrect, and it's a full reset of humanity. It basically just shakes the snow globe up, and everything just gets buried a little bit and changed, and people have to restart civilization every so often, you know, and there's not really much evidence for any of those claims. I'm sorry, there really isn't. It seems like just wild speculation, not based on history or anything tangible that we can actually hold on to. I think the Millennial Kingdom theory, to explain the quote-unquote great reset of the mud flood, kind of answers it and squares it with the history we do know and understand. Archaeologically, you know, and evidently what's in our front of our face as well. I do feel like that does explain things a lot better than just wild speculation based on, I don't know, imagination more than anything. The mud flood Tartarian people, the New Age types, I suppose, the Gnostic types who like talking about the mud flood stuff and the reset people and the reset, the great reset, the cyclical resets that always happen. There's been multiple resets type of attitude. It's like, well, there's not much evidence for any of that. You're just saying that. But there is evidence to say something did happen that definitely buried a few buildings not that long ago. Where they get the idea that there's been multiple resets, I assume they draw on the end of seasons or ages from Eastern philosophies, you know, or aeons and things like that. But I think it can be explained with the Millennial Kingdom theory more than anything. And again, perhaps I do have my biases because I am a Christian. I can accept that. But the speculations from the mud flood people, the Tartarian angle, have not been satisfactory for me personally. They don't know enough, and this idea that it was a Tartarian empire of some kind, even that alone is very, it's based on a lot of speculation, let's put it that way. It's based on a lot of history they don't really know that they're trying to piece together and make up as they go along. I mean, we know historically the Tartars were a real thing during the medieval period, that were regularly raiding into Europe. You know, the Tartarian Empire sure was a real thing that existed, but can we equate everything on the earth and all these buildings that across all continents to one grand unified Tartarian Empire? Which would have been pagan in nature, I suppose, and I don't think so. There's just something off about it. It changes things. Like it changes history too far out from what we already understand history to be. It is kind of, I don't think the Millennial Kingdom does change our history that much. I think it's self-evident, and it can be added to the history we already have and still work. You know what I mean? Again, there's something missing from the Tartarian angle, the strictly mud flooders, the strictly Tartarian people, who don't include God into the situation and don't include the Millennial Kingdom and their biblical history into the equation. There's something missing. That's all I can say. My wife, oh great, I came into the flat earth, yeah. So anyway, the Nut House, yeah, your name is very fitting. You've joined us. You've joined the Nut House here, that's for sure, by most standard people's standards. But I enjoy this. I enjoy these thought experiments. I enjoy hashing out these ideas and thinking about them with an open mind, fundamentally. That's what I'm doing. I want to remain open to all possibilities when it comes to this type of stuff. Because I like history as well, you know, and I like alternative history ideas. I like the idea of the chronology being wrong, and possibly that we there's room for us to, you know, square biblical theology into this as well, because there is this issue, you know, of Jesus said, you know, there are people stood here right now who will not die before I return. That sounds pretty immediate. I don't think anybody lived for 2,000 years who was talking to immediately during that time in the books, you know what I mean? And it's not just talking about the fig tree generation where it says this generation shall not pass away. Even though I do think a reinterpretation is necessary for that, because maybe he was literally talking about people right in front of him saying your generation will not pass away before I return. But you can then argue, well, no, he was talking about a future generation, the fig tree generation, the generation in which when Israel returns. And you can make those arguments for that particular passage, but you struggle to explain where he literally says, no, some of you here will still be alive when I return. Explain that one away with futurist arguments. It's difficult, you know. And this is our Messiah at the end of the day. This is our God. This is the person we are supposed to be following and listening to and understanding, who's teaching us about what's going on, you know. And he said, you know, you won't make it through all the cities of Israel before I return. You know, it's not a big place, is it? When you think about it geographically. It wouldn't take that long to get through all the cities of Israel. So that implies this is coming quickly, you know. And to say some of you standing here will not die before I return is pretty immediate. And then when you think about when Revelations was written on the island of Patmos, you know, and is that what it's called? I don't know if I pronounced that wrong. You know, and people speculate maybe it was written in maybe 60 AD, around that period. Somewhere around there, roughly. It says repeatedly at the end of Revelation, I come quickly. The hour is at hand. I am coming quickly. He says it, God knows. He said, I haven't read that. I haven't counted how many times it says it, but it's pretty immediate language. You know? If you think about the context of when it would have been written. I think they were being serious. I think Jesus was saying seriously, I'm coming very quickly. The time is at hand, you know. So that's what I mean. The language is there. There's precedence for this, biblical precedence for this line of thought. Then we have to consider it. We really do. And we know there's an agenda at play to deceive. So just how big could the deception be? Well, it could be this big, and we have to consider that. But I know there are many, many people within church circles, churchianity, church circles who, this is never going to get through to them. They're never even going to consider this as a possibility. It's way too out there. It's way too conspiratorial. And maybe I don't do it justice, and I don't reference enough biblical quotes in the videos I've made so far to back it up enough for those people to understand it. So hopefully when I talk to Shelley at the end of the month, in a couple of weeks' time, me and her can hash out and get through all the biblical quotes. People send me biblical quotes all the time, which prove this theory, you know, where clearly Jesus was talking quite imminently with his language, you know. And I've been compiling them and getting them ready. If anyone else knows of any other evidences that they've read within the Bible that back up this millennial kingdom already happening theory, send them to me in an email at understandingconspiracy@gmail.com. And trust me, it'll help me in my own research and my presentation when it comes to talking it out with Shelley. So please consider sending me anything you've got. You know, like I said, I've got my own things ready to go, but anything extra would be great. Or anything that you've got that I might have missed, just let me know. And send it across. But yeah, that should be a good talk with There's No Place Like Home YouTube channel. That should be good. All right, guys, I'm just going to skim to the end of the chat. I'm sorry. I know I've not been very active in the chat. I'm really sorry. There's only so much time, and I do want to keep this around about an hour or under, so I don't want to go too far with this. So I'll just go down to the bottom of the chat, and if you have any last things you want to say or anything at all, just let me know. King's Fables, where I live, the streets are made of cobblestone, so in heaven the streets being made of gold will be a big improvement. Yeah. What were people thinking with cobblestones, eh? I believe any attempt to gin up war is a pride-filled trap, says Augusta. I'm not sure what that's in reference to. We're meant to figure things out, says Elvi, and prove all things. There's no guarantee we'll get everything right, but we can keep searching. Sure. Exactly. Like you said, everyone has a piece of the puzzle, and the piece of the puzzle is in every nation. Sure, yeah, maybe. Yeah, you know, I don't want to give credit to some particular beliefs, which are very antithetical to Christianity as well. You know, there are enemies in this world of the truth at the end of the day. So maybe not everybody has a piece, you know, but everybody who's working towards the truth definitely has a piece. Let's say that, okay? I believe that the Roman Catholic Church, says Augusta, and their huge library is sitting on all the secrets kept from humanity. That's another possibility. What are they hiding under that nobody's really allowed to see unless it's under very strict controlled permissions? Something's weird going on there, isn't it? And of course, I know these books are so old that they must be kept under certain conditions so they don't decay, but I'm not buying it. I reckon they're hiding something. Yeah, I made it back to alive. No more chipmunky, Paul. That's right, Josh. Thanks for being here. No worries. I enjoy your well-thought-out comments. Check out the Antikythera, Paul. You will be glad you did, says Bubby Loves Jesus. Can you tell me what it is very briefly to give me some help with this? How much do you hate that I love simulation theory right now? Yeah, well, this is what we're talking about. You know, me and my wife talk about all sorts of things. She's not, like, as conspiratorial as I am, necessarily, and that's fine. But when we do get into it, you know, we hash out some ideas together. And she's really behind this idea that, you know, the Earth, there's elements of, like, creation and existence. It just seems fake. It seems like a simulation. You have those moments where it's like this... This isn't real, you know. There's something off about it in general. And, you know, I empathize with that thought process. And I do think, in a way, this is God's creation. And it has rules and laws, which you could equate to code, you know. And if it is a simulation, which it might be, well, it's still God's creation. You know, it's God's simulation. And that's my argument back to that when she kind of brings it up, and it's fun to speculate anyway. So I kind of believe it too, in a way, Yeah, there were definitely, it seems very much like when you really get down to the subatomic levels that it is all just light, frequency, and vibration. It's all just a projection in some weird way, as well as being perceived by our senses as physical. But there's something very matrixy about it. But it's then obviously the Gnostics go down there. Well, it's a prison for our souls. But I believe, this is God's creation, and this is how we live. This is the way it works, So it's whether you want to be an optimist or a pessimist about that perspective or idea, isn't it? At the end of the day. Really appreciate enjoyed the Philip says fellowship says Philip. I'm glad that you're getting something out of this. I appreciate you all being here. I really do. Also, thanks to the recent patrons as well who have joined up in the past month. I really appreciate that. I've kind of been hovering and stuck at a certain level for a long time on there, and it's my fault. I fell behind on offering extras. So of course, why would people stick around if I'm not giving them anything in return? So I apologize for that. But I have just put some extra stuff on there. I did an early release of a podcast I was on with Jared Weiss on there a week ago before it came public a couple of days ago. And I've got a video on there I'm probably not going to make public. And it's the after talk between me and Lloyd from yesterday. And we get into some stuff which is a little bit different from what I discussed. It's not really about Gnosticism necessarily. We talk get a bit more personal, and we talk about experiences with evil, basically, and liars and deceivers, and how you can recognize those, and the things that how the science behind it, the thoughts, how it works, how our brain works when those type of things are presented to us, how we deal with psychopathy and danger and lies, how we recognize lies, and how we can apply that to when examining the truth and examining people's claims. And it was a really good talk. It was a really good after talk. So I recorded it. It was about an hour actually. And that's on Patreon for you guys to listen to. So if anyone's a Patreon member already and you're listening, go and check that out if you haven't already. It's a really good talk. And again, it gets a bit more personal and a bit more because the thing is, I invited Lloyd on to talk about Gnosticism, and he came on with a presentation, obviously. I know what it's like, 'cause I have to do it all the time. You're not relaxed. And you might say things or do things, and because you're trying to get the points across in such a limited amount of time. But when you're in that zone after the talk, when the pressure's off and you're just spitballing back and forth, the conversation flows so much differently. And you get these really great conversations, he was happy enough to let me put our great conversation after the fact onto Patreon for people to listen to. So go check it out. It's got a different tone, and I like those type of conversations. Those are the type of conversations I want to have on the truth therapy sessions, to be honest, with other people who are in the game of conspiracy, from whatever angle and worldview they come from. Come on and share your story of how you became somebody who thinks about conspiracies, because it's a wild story every time. Everyone's got a story to tell in that world, and I want it to be relaxed, chilled out. So, yeah. So, anyone who has subscribed to Patreon, please go and check that out. And I'll have some more stuff going on there every week. I'll try and get something extra up there. Like I said, maybe these after talks I have with podcasters, because I get a lot of people on the channel lately. I've got a lot of people coming up booked in for the next 3 months. So there'll be a lot of extra after show stuff going up on there as well. So anyone who wants to support that or actually get access to any of that stuff, it's just $5 a month. So just that's the minimum base. You can contribute more, but $5 is just the basis, and you get access to everything. That's all it is. So yeah, Slow-mo, I really enjoyed the Gnostic nonsense presentation. Yeah, it was good. It ruffled a lot of feathers, I'm not gonna lie, and I don't have time to go into it today. But yeah, it was an eye opener for me as well. There's a lot of stuff even I didn't know about being presented there, and I was like, this is food for thought for sure, but it's definitely going to make a lot of people angry, perhaps in a cognitive dissonance way, like a denial type anger, like, no, that can't be true, I don't want to believe that type of anger. You know that type of anger we're talking about. I suppose we've all been there. Conan Highwoods is asking my wife about the flat earth and simulation theory, and Conan, don't, you're not gonna, if you're gonna get into an argument with my wife, trust me, I know you're not gonna win. Okay. I certainly lose every time. And that's not an aspersion to my wife, by the way. That's I love her for that reason. But she does say, I don't think it's flat, but I'm not actually attached to it being a simulation either. I just find that one fun. And it is a fun con. I agree, it is a fun concept. The after interview was good stuff. Wonder what he knows about fifth generational warfare. Probably a lot more than I should have asked him about that, to be honest, Jeffrey, because I read the article you sent me about fifth generational warfare, and it was interesting about the psychological warfare that could be used against civilizations to bring them down. And he worked in security, and he was kind of in that world and understood those type of tactics used against nations and against peoples as well. So maybe I should have asked him about that. When I do have a future conversation with him, I'll bring it up and see if he has any insight on it. It was interesting, yeah. Wendy even says simulation theory is fun for real, absolutely. Ruffling of feathers means you're on the right path, brother 100. Yeah, I hope so. I mean, again, I'm not trying to offend anybody with these videos, and people were offended that I would dare get somebody on who would question the roots of Protestantism, I guess, and clearly this is a Catholic shill. That kind of attitude was the response. It's like, I don't think he is. Pointing out stuff about Martin Luther is not tacit support of Catholicism necessarily. In fact, his argument, from what I gather, and it's pretty much my view, is, when it comes to questioning stuff like this, go back to what the early church fathers, the first century church fathers, were saying about these things. Go back to the original source doctrine, from the beginning of it all, just after Christ and his ascension type of thing, back into heaven before his return. What were the earliest people, from Peter himself, what were they saying about what a church should be? That's what he tells me. That's where he goes to it from. And he says something, I think it's in the other live show. Maybe I missed it out because I did start recording a little bit late. But he basically, I think he, what does he say? He says something like, you listen to what these early church fathers were writing and saying, and it sounds a lot like Catholicism. But he also says, but Catholicism today does have a lot of problems. But what they're talking about does seem similar, So it's not like he's not just going to throw it all out the window, because Catholicism today does seem to be used as some kind of ploy, in a way, with some bad actors who are running the show. You know what I mean? And I'm extremely dubious myself, though I don't think, I've not talked about it with him, but I'm dubious myself of the changing of the Ten Commandments, adding idol worship in there, removing idol worship, and basically splitting the covetous sin into two. Do not covet became do not covet after your neighbor's possessions, and do not cover after your neighbor's wife. So they made that into two and just removed the no false idols sin, so they can justify having idol worship in the Catholic Church. That seems very sus to me. Like, just on the get-go, that's a bit strange. That doesn't seem right at all. So there's that alone. I'm dubious of it all. I really am. And if you look at some of the doctrines coming out of the Catholic Church today and what the Pope is endorsing, it's kind of like the current Pope, shall we say. Yeah, it's something's off. Okay, so I'm not, don't, no, don't, we don't know, but again, I'm not going to get into that today. That's a whole of the stream and debate, isn't it? And that would require hours to hash out and go through. And again, I don't consider myself an expert or an authority in all these things. I just know enough about a few, about a bit, I know a bit about everything. I won't call myself an expert on Catholic theology. I really wouldn't. I think my chat's frozen. Sorry, guys. Give me a minute. Let me just reset this. Everything's all over the place. It would be nice if the earth was shaped like a long dog, says my wife. Only Paul will understand my comments, I think. Anyone who's watched Bluey and is really into it will understand what the long dog reference is, but that's an obscure one for sure. Paul, they also changed the day of worship from Saturday to Sunday. There was a cardinal that wrote a lot about the changes they did. Yeah, this is what I mean. There's a lot of suspect stuff going on in there. But again, the questions do get opened up when you consider the Gnostic influence on Christianity as well. And there is this idea, and that people, now I understand that the Holy Spirit is a guiding spirit, okay, and can give personal revelations to people and information. But I'm dubious when people take those personal revelations and bring it to the rest of the world and say, you must believe what I've been told or else, because God told me. That's where you're borderlining into some kind of Gnostic. It's a fine line, it's a very fine line because Gnostics claim to have been given knowledge from higher sources beyond themselves too. It's no, they call it receiving, gnosis, receiving knowledge, and gaining true gnosis and saying the Holy Spirit told me, and therefore you should all believe is not dissimilar. So this is what I mean. Yeah. So the question comes down to, so who has our final authority? Do you, an individual, have authority to dictate what the rest of the church should believe? Just because you say the Holy Spirit spoke to you, it's kind of okay. So how do we, what do we test that against to see if it's true? And whose authority do we trust to say that that's the final word? And then we can go to the word, and we can read the book. This is where you get the sola scriptura argument that the book alone is enough, the words of God is enough, and all we need is the word. Sure. But then the problem is there's thousands of interpretations of what each passage can mean. And that again is quite Gnostic in principle, the idea that it could be an allegory for anything. And my interpretation is correct, and I think that's the arguments Lloyd was trying to make. It's like, where do you draw the line exactly in terms of final authority and what the word actually means? And he does say, that's possibly what where the church, or the early church at least, came into it to make sure sound doctrine would be followed and people wouldn't give in to unsound doctrine and fables, And it's kind of, we just got to be careful. So I can understand the need for an authoritative church. I understand, but then that is, churches can become corrupt, even if it is the original one. So again, I'm not definite on everything, but you do have to ask yourself these questions. Who does get final authority in saying this? And people say, well, Jesus does, of course, in the words of Jesus in the Bible, and I agree, he is final authority on everything, absolutely. But then you have, who's going to interpret the word correctly that Jesus said? Because people can spin the word in any way. And like I said, even this millennial kingdom stuff, for example, is examples of people taking Jesus' word to mean two different things. Some people say when Jesus said, this generation will not pass away before I return, most people have interpreted that to mean, yes, he's coming back in 2,000 years when Israel gets reinstated. But then some people in our group have interpreted that to mean, well, no, he was talking directly to people in front of him. Who's correct? Do you get what I'm saying? It's kind of, and this is where words like heresy come up, isn't it? And that's a heresy that was proven wrong in an early church council. You hear that quite a lot. But these, I'm a relatively young Christian, and I have considered myself a non-denominational Christian for so long because every church I've been to always claims to have that their way is the right way. And there's something off about that. I believe truth is objective, not subjective at the end of the day. And I don't think it can just be up to each church's whim and interpretation. There's got to be a final truth, right? There's got to be a truth, not many truths. I'm not a moral relativist like that. So I'm still learning myself, and I hope, like I said, I'm just speaking out loud here. I'm my thoughts out loud. And it's going to be I think it's going to be a lifelong journey, personally. I don't think I'm going to have all final answers till the end. But fundamentally, my faith is based on that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and he died and rose again for our sins. The gospel truth is that. That's as far as I'm concerned, that's unchangeable, but everything else is still being hashed out, isn't it? And wars are being fought over this, these misinterpretations that still to this day, it's contentious. It's very contentious. And who am I? Who am I to say what is and isn't? But I'm certainly thinking about it, and I'm sure many of you are as well. I'm sure there's many of you out there, especially people who come out of the New Age into Christianity. I do feel like the anti-church, anti-authoritative institution type of Christianity, they're naturally against that idea because they already come from a free-loving hippie type of place. But I've also seen it go the other way, where they get extremely doctrinal, go down the extreme churchianity route coming out of the New Age, because they need that kind of rules and structure, which they got from the New Age, but they've replaced it with the rules and structure of extreme orthodoxy instead. It can go many ways, but problem is, a lot of ex-New Age thinkers and ex-occult thinkers, they have a lot of Gnostic ideas already within them that they learned through their occult practices and their mystery school wisdoms that they believe they were learning a lot of stuff about. So it's easy for them to then turn to Christian Gnosticism because it sounds Christian enough for them to, and that's where the deceptions can still be running through them from their old occult life. And they're still in the Gnostic occult world, but they believe they have the truth of Christianity, that Christ was just there to teach us all to reach through knowledge the ability to be like him. And so it's a really it's a minefield out there. It's a web. It's a mess. It's really difficult for a lot of people to get the truth right. And I think something to the idea that maybe we should go back to the beginning. What were the first early church fathers immediately after Christ's ascension? What were they saying? What do they consider sound doctrine and the right way to do things? And then obviously take that to Jesus's word and apply that frame over it. And does Jesus agree? And maybe at the end of all this, maybe there is a need for a true church. I'm certainly not going to lead that in any way, but maybe originally, what was the Catholic Church at the start, and maybe what we have today isn't it, but what it originally was it? Maybe it was. Even the Millennial Kingdom theory posits that the Catholic faith and church, as we know it today, is not what it was. It's been corrupted, but it's the remnants of the church that was established during his millennial kingdom, and the saints and everything with these halos were the resurrected saints who were murdered before, just before his second coming, and that's why we have saints today and all that type of thing. That's where it really, I've heard all sorts of arguments, and it's again wild speculation on a lot of that, but there's something to it. And again, I don't know. What do you guys think? Let me know your thoughts and feelings on that particular matter. But I know it's tough. I know it's a tough subject to tackle for sure. I've still got a lot to learn. Okay, I don't know what people are talking about. Again, when you talk about these type of things, it really boils people's blood. So I'm expecting some kickback. But again, guys, I'm allowed to think. I'm a free individual. New Age to Christianity would probably need some adjustment time. Yeah. It was funny when Lloyd said the Genesis 6 author is a bit conspiracy minded. I was like, yeah, that's fine with me. Absolutely. I thought it was funny when he said that too. I was like, you have no idea, Lloyd. You do not even know. Yeah, it was funny. But fair enough. Like I said, not everybody's a crazy conspiracy theorist like us guys. Not everybody comes and views the world from that angle. And that's fair enough. Okay. Not everybody has to, all right? We cannot expect that of everybody. We really can't. Someone randomly just said Torah for no reason. I don't know. Fair enough. Right, guys, I've gone over time here. I'm gonna have to call this a night. It's been good talking with you all. For as much as I know, I've kind of talked at you all. Like I said, tonight was going to be a truth or therapy session originally. I guess I needed some therapy. I guess I just needed to say some things and then and speak out loud and get these thoughts in my head just out so I can hear what they actually sound like. Because that's another good thing about talking it out loud. You can actually hear what you actually sound like. And when thoughts are in your head all the time, you can think they're rational because you only ever hear it in your head. But when you actually hear a sentence being said out loud with words and noise, you truly hear it for what it is. And sometimes you can hear it and go, wow, did I really just say that? Is that really what I believe? You know what I mean? And it's that's why I like to talk. It does help. And I recommend, you know, you all talk to yourself like a crazy person. If you've got no one to talk to, just say it out loud to yourself and try and think about what it sounds like. And you know what? Even if you're not talking to anybody and you're self-conscious about talking to yourself, talk to a recorder of some kind. Just get a recorder, turn it on, and start saying your thoughts out loud to the recorder. So you know it's not for nothing. It's being documented in some way. You know, that recorder is listening. So it's kind of like having an ear to listen. And when you're being recorded, you are conscious of your words a lot more, okay? So you will think about what you actually think. You'll think about what you actually believe. And you'll try and find better ways to articulate your beliefs. And if it sounds crazy and you realize it is crazy, it'll be because you said it out loud, okay? But when things just rattle around your brain as abstract concepts, it's easy to believe them more, even though they might be crazy. Okay, so just a bit of advice, a little tip I kind of found along the way. Saying things out loud does help you understand your beliefs a lot more. Writing them down does too. But actually hearing it being said, it's a good thing for everybody, I think. I'd recommend it to everybody. Will you be doing presentations again, like the ones you did in the early, mid-2003? I miss those. Oh, you mean where I get a few talking topics together at the start of each therapy session and just go through them all and show you things I've learned and things? Yeah, I will be probably doing more of those when I find the time. But most of my therapy sessions right now are actually people coming on to share their stories, other podcasters, other creators, other content creators. So I'll be doing a lot more of that. I always do these live Q&As, but maybe I can start my live show, my live Q&As, with a bit of a presentation about a topic instead. In a way, I kind of did give a presentation today, but it was all with words. So I suppose I gave a lecture, a thought experiment lecture. But it really depends on where my research is taking me at that time. Again, the episode I'm working on for the clown one right now is about clown serial killers. I've been sitting on it for a while, but I've been so busy, it's been hard for me to formalize the script and get it said and get it recorded with all the images. And I'm going to try and I'll try and get that done before the end of the month, I think. I'm working tomorrow morning, organizing some videos. So maybe I'll try and get that script written out fully tomorrow so I can get that to you. And that's my Nephilim clown stuff is very presentational like, isn't it? So have that to look forward to at least. But yeah, guys, thanks for listening. I'll be back soon with more work. I'll be making some clips of some of the things we've been talking about as well and make some extra videos for the coming week. Next weekend, who have I got coming on next weekend? Oh, it's killing me now that I can't remember. I don't even know where my phone is to find out. I just wrote all this down on my calendar as well. No, I've not got my phone handy to find out, but I do have guests coming on the weekend. I think JC follows JC. Is that his YouTube channel? You might know him. You might have seen him around recently. I think Alpha Talks has just talked to him recently on his channel as well. JT follows JC. I think I'm talking with him on Saturday on his podcast, so that should be good. He's a relatively new content creator, I think. Relative, I said he's been in the game for a few years, but he's growing in popularity, and yeah, it's going to be good to have a little chat with him about things. He did a Ancient Angels documentary. I think it was called Ancient Angels. Which was quite big as well in our circles. So yeah, I'll be talking with him on Saturday. And on Sunday, I can't remember who I've got coming on the show, but it's I've got a podcaster coming on. I'm going to have to find out. Where's my post? I made a post about this. I'm going to have to just go and look at it. Oh, it's going to drive me crazy otherwise. Community post. No, I can't. It's not there. I can't. Is it Raven? Is it from the Ravens Watch? Or is that in February? Have I got David coming on? It's gone, guys. It's literally gone. I'm drawing a blank. But yeah, there are plenty of guests coming on anyway. No, David's on the 18th, so that's wrong. But yeah, there's plenty of people coming on. I've even got Jesse Spots on at the end of the month as well. I've got Shelley at the end of the month on the 27th. I've got plenty of people coming in. Is it Vicky? No, Vicky's next month. Vicky Joy Anderson's next month as well. Yeah, I'm drawing a blank, guys. I'm sorry. Plenty of guests coming. I've got it written on the calendar inside, so I'm going to have to go and have a look as soon as I go in. But yeah, it's been good. Thanks for listening. And as always, God bless.